We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there, Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein.
No.
Sir!
No.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good. Had a nice little productive day this morning. Dropped off the solid toddler at camp for a couple hours. Got some work in for this show.
Yeah.
For another show that we haven't released. Like a full other podcast that we're yet to launch. Got some work in for Solid Verbal Media, Inc. I think we're near finalized. I don't even know if we were supposed to announce anything yet. But the 2021 shirt looks very crisp.
Very
crisp. If I do say so myself.
Very crisp. You sent it along on, was it yesterday or the day before? Whenever you sent it along this weekend.
Yeah, yesterday.
Very crisp. Crisp is a great way to describe it.
Thank you. Had myself some iced chai to keep the creativity flowing. And I was talking to you and doing all sorts of things. So, you know, made a nice little Target run. Ty, I'm very happy with how my morning turned out. How are you?
I'm good. Look, We've got an exciting show in front of us for this reason, and this reason alone. It is not the college pitch segment, the hard sell, where your boy is taking on some water. I know I called it at the very beginning of the series, but
right.
Been taking on some water here. We did have some gracious TCU brethren come to my defense.
I think you're more of a social media coordinator than you are a recruiting coordinator.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Had some thoughtful, gracious TCU brethren come to my defense. We did have somebody chime in and say that they wouldn't go to any school I was selling, and they also wouldn't trust you, which
I think that's right.
I think it's about right. Anyway, mm-hmm. It is not that bit today here on the Solid Verbal. It is also not the Q&A bit, at least not in the normal sense. One of the things we realized over the weekend as we were trying to figure out what are we going to record, we haven't had an opportunity to ask each other questions, right?
That's getting pretty
damn close now to the start of the college football season, or at least what we would consider the preseason. We've got mm-hmm. publications out there talking about where teams are ranked, what you should be looking for, et cetera, et cetera.
We appear in one of them.
We have our face off in the Phil Steele preview magazine face off ad, which mm-hmm. people seem to have taken very nicely too. But we just haven't had a chance to have a discussion about how we're feeling with regard to the coming season, to the coming preseason, so on and so forth. So what we've got today, we each have five questions for one another. I've got mm-hmm. five questions for you. You've got five questions for me. Of course, in true Solid Verbal fashion, one of those questions going each way is tangentially related to college football.
Right.
tangentially related to Ty and Dan. So
tangentially, I just said off topic. It could be anything you want. You could ask my like hamstring techniques for stretching. You could have done whatever you wanted to do. It doesn't matter.
Mine is tangential to college football.
Yeah. Mine is leg swings and some various floor stretches. If people are interested, we can go into further detail another time.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com as always is the email. Don't forget to go on out to our website and all of our social media channels as well. Again, I don't come to you hat in hand begging for follows on Instagram, but we are trying to do more on Instagram. So if you haven't already followed that account, please do follow that account. We're going to be posting some fun stuff there.
Yes, absolutely.
Daniel, this was your concept, as many have been.
We've done something like this in the past.
I'm most concerned with appropriately titling this episode.
Nip slip, iPad. What else does it for SEO reasons? I don't know.
Let's think that through. I want to start with COVID. Let's not name it COVID, please. We tried a whole series on COVID that didn't do well.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with you and with a very obvious question.
Mm-hmm.
Which team should be the number one team in the country at the start of the season? Now, some context to keep in mind. I know off the top of everyone's head, it's like, Bama. Got to be Bama. Mm-hmm. Bama.
Yep.
New quarterback for Bama. New quarterback for Clemson. Though we've seen him a little bit. New quarterback for Ohio State. We've also got a team like an Oklahoma that is still loaded. Definitely not a new quarterback. As well as Georgia, which hopefully is, through the woods now with the JT Daniels injury thing, and they can get that offense ratcheted up. Those are just five teams to name a few. So who is your number one team in the country at the start of the season?
I think the case is interesting for a couple teams, and you mentioned a couple of them. And the case of the Georgia offense, the George Pickens injury, we'll see. We'll see what his timeline is, because that's a major part of that offense, that field stretching option. I think the easiest call is probably Clemson.
Really?
Because we've seen a little bit more. Well, no, the easiest call is Alabama, but the easiest call in terms of what their schedule looks like in their conference, part of their, the team likeliest to go wire to wire because of the ease of conference is Clemson, right? So if you want it to be the most correct, now obviously Clemson begins, it's week one that they have Georgia.
Correct.
Yeah. So obviously they begin with a heavyweight, but if we're trying to be accurate about where a team is right now and combine that with how we project them out, to have a quarterback who has played in a meaningful, huge spot or two, DJU played against Boston College and Notre Dame.
Right.
And to have that experience combined with the level of recruiting up front on defense and the wide receiver recruitment and development and just general talent level and depth that's been accumulating, Alabama is the easiest call because you have the best chance of being right based on track record. But Alabama has a more difficult schedule to play than Clemson. So my best team right now, if I had to wager my actual dollars, is Alabama. My number one is Clemson. It might be sort of a head heart thing. I'm not sure which direction, but I think Clemson right now, because of the limited, very limited sample size at quarterback, they would be my number one.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Our friend Phil Steele picked Oklahoma number one.
That's fine.
He's got Oklahoma winning it all this year.
Spencer. That's the quarterback that has of these teams in contention, who has the most experience with that team.
For sure. And Lincoln Riley with an experienced quarterback, the proof is in the pudding there. He's done a pretty good job with that. They've also got a bunch of weapons coming back, a really good offensive line, a running back. So they're loaded on offense. The question with Oklahoma remains defense. But if I were going to pick one, I would probably say Oklahoma. Outside of Alabama. Alabama is just like such low-hanging fruit that I almost felt guilty asking the question. But I was curious to get your take on it because, this is, as we've said all offseason, a very interesting chapter that we're going into now with 2021.
COVID. Ohio State's interesting too, by the way.
For sure. Oh, I mean, they're all interesting for some reason.
The case for number one Yeah, and their schedule. Now it's new quarterback, but the receiver duo he has, likely C.J. Stroud, the receiver duo he has, along with the continuity of coaching staff, which all of these schools can't say necessarily, especially Alabama, and what Ohio State's conference slate looks like. I know they play Oregon, but they're playing Oregon at home, and this is still an Oregon team that I expect to be very good, but to go on the road and beat Ohio State, there's nothing yet that has me convinced that Oregon is built to do that. So, yeah, it's a tough argument all around to say who's number one, but I'm going to stick with Clemson. Why not?
Yeah, for me, if it's not Bama, it's probably Oklahoma. X factor being the defense, which, to be fair, should also be pretty good, but that seems to be more the question in Norman.
I have it down here that Oklahoma does play Kansas State this year.
I can confirm.
So better see that win before you feel good about saying they're the number one team. But yeah.
Question.
I think it's on the road, right? They lost at home last year.
Yes.
KSU. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Question number two, Dan.
Yeah.
You All have right. to pick one of the following week one games as your lock of the week. We have some early point spreads. You mentioned Georgia and Clemson. Clemson is a 3-point favorite over the Georgia Bulldogs. We've also got LSU against UCLA. LSU is a 5-point favorite. We got Penn State versus Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a 4-point favorite. And we've got Notre Dame -9.5 against Florida State. These are all week one games. There are many other week one games that in due time we will discuss, but those four in particular are of particular interest to me. They're all under double digits and feature some pretty big teams. Who are you going with? Who's your lock?
I think the baby Bears, the Bruins.
You're okay. Walk me through this. Let's unpack that a little bit.
I live my life a certain way, right? I have a certain picking lifestyle that I adhere to.
A quarter mile at a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The familia. When we talked about potential week one matchups, maybe a month or two ago, you flagged this one. You flagged LSU at UCLA. You tend to think that UCLA is much, much improved than they've been over the last couple of years, that their team is interesting, and LSU was sort of a mess last year, did pull it together, finished 500, but you think early on that that's an advantage for UCLA?
Yeah, I think, so UCLA has a week zero game, right? So they play Hawaii week zero. And so this will be UCLA's second game. And so we always like to talk about what at least we perceive to be the best, the greatest improvement jump happens between your first and second games. And so this would be UCLA's second game. It's at home. It's LSU's first game on the road with two new coordinators. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, it was sort of a semi-new coordinator on offense last year, but new defensive coordinator, first game for LSU, Mississippi State. Like, it wasn't great out of the jump. Now, it was a COVID year. There were a lot of variables at play. But I think with LSU still trying to, I mean, we don't know for sure who's starting a quarterback for LSU, and it's summertime. And I think I'm very optimistic that the new coordinators for LSU are going to play well. They come highly regarded and recommended, and there's, you know, that the youthful energy, I guess, of Joe Brady. It means nothing. Youthful energy means nothing. You're either good or bad at coaching. But I do like that it wasn't Ed Orgeron leaning back on buddies or the biggest possible name like he did with Bo Pelini. So I'm high on LSU, big picture. Situationally, UCLA as a dog, I wish it were a noisier place, the Rose Bowl, for UCLA game. That'd be nice for my pick. But if UCLA's defense is merely average-ish, which they were at some points last year, some points they really did struggle. UCLA was like 3 minutes away from going 7-0 last year. Seven games. So they have this crazy early turnover game against Colorado, and they furiously come back, but they can't win it. They lose to Oregon with a backup quarterback, UCLA's backup quarterback, and they were driving to win in that game. They had USC on the ropes. They had Stanford on the ropes. So they lose their final two games by a combined, it looks like, 6 points.
Right.
I just think if you dig deep into UCLA, now I don't think they're running the table. I don't think they're even going to like only lose once or something like that. But Chip Kelly in, I believe, year 4 with an experienced quarterback, with a couple of legit dudes up front on defense. I don't think they have the Winter Wonders at receiver or anything like that. Like they don't have the depth. They don't have the top level talent. But I think every single last drop of winning juice will be wrung out of this UCLA orange. Because I do like the coaching staff a good deal, and I like the experience and what they return all over the field. So, again, I don't even know if they're winning this game outright. But as dogs situationally, that's what I feel best about, because I don't trust the Wisconsin offense. And I like where they're at running back. They've got some youth there that's interesting. But the defense took a step back. The Notre Dame and Florida State. Yeah, there's nothing trustworthy right now about Florida State, and I don't know what Notre Dame with King Cone, your guy, looks like. So I'm just, that feels like stay away, and as does Clemson, Georgia, just because I don't feel strongly one direction or another about those teams, because they're two top teams. So situationally, with what's in flux at LSU and what is consistent at UCLA, and it being week two, and it being at home, I'm going to roll Bruins.
I would go Florida State plus the points.
That was a really bad defense last year.
I would go Florida State plus the points. They're at home.
Okay.
It's week one. Notre Dame's got some turnover. They should still be very good, and the schedule is favorable. But 9.5 is a lot in week
one. It's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. That would be my first selection.
Notre Dame has come out of the gate pretty well, though, right? Like they had that sluggish first half against Louisville a couple years ago, but then really poured it on.
But too much uncertainty on the offense to cover 9.5. That's not to say they're not going to win by 7, by 8, but 9.5, that's pushing it for me.
If we get Mackenzie Milton at 80%, who's the best quarterback on the field?
Mackenzie Milton.
Okay.
My second selection here would probably also be that LSU game. The caveat, though, is if you would be interested in going UCLA in that game, taking the points at home,
yeah,
I would wait until kickoff. A lot of betting apps right now will let you bet on that game. That's going to go up. People are going to see that.
You
and
think
say that's really low? Yeah, for sure.
You think people are going to hit LSU on the road?
I think that's going up. So I'd be inclined to go UCLA like the Friday before kickoff, the Thursday before kickoff.
Okay.
Next up, I would probably go, probably take Penn State plus the points. Even though it's in Wisconsin at Camp Randall Stadium, there are questions about Wisconsin. I think you're fair to call those out. I'm not very sure of that selection.
Friend, I have questions about Penn State.
Well, I have questions too. I have questions too. But they did pull it together down the stretch last year, which I think
that's true.
Was very favorable. And then last would be Georgia Clemson. That's a coin flip to me. I don't know who's winning that game. I would err on the side of Clemson for sure, but 3.5. 3.5 tells me that's basically a coin flip. So
right.
My number one selection would be Florida State plus the points.
Where is Clemson, Georgia neutral?
I believe so.
Is that all? Well, is it neutral-ish? Is it Atlanta?
I'm checking now
as well. This is real good. We're prepping as we are recording. That's the move to make. Clemson,
that game's
it looks like
Charlotte.
It's at home.
It's in Charlotte.
Oh, it's in Charlotte. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's neutral-ish. Yeah, that does feel very coin flippy. But like DJU in his first like start as a unquestioned starter on a big stadium.
Yeah, he threw for 400 yards.
That's just Notre Dame. No, I'm talking about this game against Georgia. This top flight it was obviously a top flight defense in Notre Dame. That's a very difficult. You know, that's a very difficult ask for like a newly entrenched starter at quarterback.
All right. Next question for you. What is a realistic expectation for Steve Sarkisian in year one at Texas, Dan? I'm going to leave the is Texas back question.
No, forget that. Yeah.
For another day, another time. What is realistic? If you're a Horns fan, what should you realistically expect from Sark in year one? What are you looking for as a fan?
I want breakout Bijan Robinson year. I want a much more explosive offense. I want by the middle of the season, I want there to be pass rushing solutions, except that you are going to be involved in shootouts because I don't know if I fully trust the secondary or linebackers. It just seems very thin when you look at some of the talent up front, especially along the interior of the defensive line. And then I know they return a bunch along the offensive line. I don't know if I fully trust it. It felt like Sam Ehlinger was just getting shellacked last year. So maybe they're pretty good on the ground, but I expect more creativity on offense. None of this like late developing crossing pattern garbage that we, you know, came to expect at the end of close games. So with a more explosive offense, with a potentially pretty dangerous defense up front, I think it's realistic to expect in year one of Sark, you know, what I consider to be a better offensive play caller than what they've had recently. Something like, because they have what? They have Louisiana and Arkansas early. They got the Raging Cajuns.
Right.
That's, a, I mean, didn't the Raging Cajuns just kind of dominate Iowa State in a weird game to start a year last year? And Iowa State almost won the conference. I think this is a 9-win team. Mm. If they can get anything in terms of breakout from receiver, they've got a couple young guys I know they like. Yeah, they should not be losing more than three games. They should potentially, with a favorable bowl matchup, win double-digit games.
Double-digit
games. Just because
9 or 10
wins. Yeah. I think they should be flirting. I think they should not be... They had down games last year, and again, COVID year. Like, you can't fully put every single bit of weight into these results. But yeah, they had... Well, they scored 20 against Iowa State. Very good Iowa State team. They scored not that many against, I believe, West Virginia. Like, I think those issues... Like, they may lose more games 37-34, but I don't think they're going to be shooting themselves in the foot offensively like they were at times last year. They were pretty terrible in terms of how often they went three and out on offense, just generating easy momentum early on in drives. I think they're going to be a lot better just because when it's all said and done, he said with a cliche, Bijan Robinson, we might be talking about in the very small handful of best offensive skill players in the country next year. So with a starting point like that, granted new quarterback, yeah, I think there's more to like about Texas with talent on hand and the refresh. I like Pete Kwiatkowski running that defense. There are going to be clear year one issues, but it shouldn't prevent them from winning 9 games. So that's my expectation.
Well, I've got good news for you. If you feel confident about it, the over-under is 8. And currently, you're getting plus odds on the over. So you bet $10, you'd win 11, as opposed to the under, which is heavily favored at the moment. So
it's there's tricky stretches, and they have TCU on the road, who they lost to last year before the Oklahoma game in Dallas. And then, as I'm seeing it right here, I mean, that whole middle part of the schedule is at TCU, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, at Baylor, at Iowa State. I expect an improved Baylor with Grimey running the show, and Iowa State just returns so damn much. I mean, it's a very landminey middle of the schedule, but
I still feel
really good about Texas.
9 wins seems like it should just be a thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't, the schedule doesn't jump out at me as being demonstrably difficult or more difficult than normal. So 9 wins. Yeah, I'm with you. All right.
If they can wrap up on defense, I think they're this is why I just brought it up. Tackle success rate, 116th in the country.
Yeah.
If they are able to wrap up just nominally better than they did last year, I don't think nine wins is unreasonable.
Okay. Next topic, Dan.
Next.
A handful of notable teams grossly underperformed last season. Weird COVID year, mind you, blah, blah, blah. PSU, my Nits lost their first 5 games. Michigan went 2-4. LSU went 5-5, bit lopsided of a season. We had teams like Minnesota 3-4, Wisconsin 4-3. The bottom fell out on them for a while. What was the biggest mirage last year? Who do you think?
There's a lot of Big Ten here.
Yeah, there is. Who do you think is set for the biggest rebound in 2021?
Of these teams, LSU. Is it just who am I selecting?
No, anybody.
Overall?
Just giving you a couple examples to pick from, but biggest rebound, who you got?
I like my Ducks to rebound, but going week two to, I like Louisville, by the way. I think Louisville can get that defense. I like stability at quarterback. I like stability on the coaching staff. I think last year was just a mess defensively. I think that can get cleaned up. I like a couple of their defensive coaches a good amount. Florida State solving the quarterback issue, potentially, hopefully, with McKenzie Milton. Feels like they went 2-6 in the ACC last year. Is that right? I think they can have a winning record if the defense is at all, has at all fight. I know they brought in a couple of interesting transfers. I think Florida State is a big bounce back, and not necessarily that it was a mirage, but they've improved things enough that they could have a big bounce back year. If your team's LSU, just because I feel like quarterback is in a better place, and I know Tanner Morgan's back from Minnesota, and they had all sorts of issues last year in terms of availability and guys early on, but that defense was a mess. The defense was truly a mess at times last year, and they just got worked over by Iowa, right?
No.
Those are the types of things I hate to see happen middle to late in the year. Like, LSU really did seem to get its act together, even though there were defensive struggles for sure all season long. They solidified things on offense. They started making plays on defense a little bit more. So LSU is my answer of those teams. Uncharacteristically down year to bounce back from. That was sort of a mirage. I mentioned UCLA with how close their losses were situationally. I think that's interesting if you're looking for like a big win jump.
Here's why Wisconsin's a very interesting answer.
Yeah, tell me about Wisconsin, because I have no idea if I fully trust Graham Mertz.
I don't know either, but I know that the schedule is very workable and for the most part front loaded. All right. So we talked about the Penn State game, which they're a slight favorite at home week one. They've also got the Notre Dame game, the neutral site game in Chicago, Soldier Field, end of September. Probably will be a dog in that game, but we'll see. Week after that, they've got Michigan also at home. Camp Randall Stadium. Don't know what the line's going to look like. I would assume that they're probably going to be favored in that one as well. Between October the 2nd, when they play Michigan, and the rest of the year, here's what their schedule looks like. At Illinois, Army, at Purdue, homecoming game, again, obviously at home, Camp Randall against Iowa, which will be a tough out, always is. Then another home game against Northwestern. Then another home game against Nebraska. And then they close out the year on the road at Minnesota. So most of the big games are at home. Pretty much all these games are at home for Wisconsin. And after the first week of October, it gets much, much, much easier. So we could be in a situation where, let's say Wisconsin goes, 2-1, 2-2 even, first couple games of the year, runs the table the rest of the way. They slowly but steadily move up in the polls and eventually find their way into the Big Ten championship. So this schedule does not scare me, is what I'm saying. And it does not scare me at all, because it's there aren't a lot of heavy hitters on here, and it is mostly front loaded.
Man, I don't know. I watched Wisconsin put up single digits three straight games last year against not crazy playoff level competition.
It's true. It's true. And it's true.
It's a post-COVID Graham Mertz. And so You don't know what his capability was physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. That definitely hurts. And certainly there is a lot to be encouraged by who they play, Wake, in their bowl game. So that's encouraging. They scored in that game, which is always nice. Thanks for that, Wisconsin. My issue is there's a lot of high floor teams on this schedule. Not necessarily killers, but you mentioned backloaded. So what, you have Army? Never easy. Purdue should probably not have a good year this year. Iowa destroyed them last year. Rutgers is certainly getting better. Like the general talent level and the recruiting level is definitely getting better at Rutgers, and you saw them make noise last year. Northwestern won the division. Nebraska, I'm not terribly worried about right now. And Minnesota's kind of a wild card right now. And you talk about the top of that, like, Wisconsin isn't going 5-7, but maybe they will. Like, I don't have a read on it because of the depth to which they fell offensively last year.
I don't know how much you could read into that. For what it's worth, Vegas has them at an over under of 9.5 for their win total going into.
I would love that under.
And make sure that that's right. 9.5.
I would, I would take that under out to a too good first date restaurant because I was feeling so good about it.
People feel as good about the under to the number as they do about the over for Texas in 8 wins. So you are simpatico, let's say, with the betting public.
Yeah, the problem is Wisconsin misses some, to me, current guppy-ish teams in the Big Ten. They don't get Michigan State and they don't get Maryland, which I would feel better about in terms of padding that win total. Purdue, getting Purdue as a road game is nice. Getting Rutgers as a road game is nice. Their road slate at Illinois, at Purdue, at Rutgers, at Minnesota. It's choice, Ty. That's USDA, whatever the top of USDA is. But
okay, all right.
I have my concerns. I want, like, there's no obvious killer at running back for the first time in a few years. And the receiving situation has gotten worse. Quarterback is kind of a question mark at the moment. And defensively, they definitely took a step back. You know, they weren't aided by their offense, but I have concerns.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's come back to the off-topic questions. Why don't you give me your 4 college football-related ones?
All right. This one I'm curious about because this is entirely subjective. And this is just me taking the temperature inside your brain. Okay. Number one, if you had your way, which matchups would decide the top of each conference purely out of not just like college football is better when this team is good? No, like how a team is currently constituted, if they were to reach their potential, it would make for the most interesting conference deciding matchup, not necessarily championship, but like we had those Clemson Florida State ones, for instance, all those years that Florida State just dominated until the tables were turned. We had a whole bunch of big, you know, USC Oregon games. We had obviously Oklahoma Texas seemed to play, or even Bedlam was a huge matchup that helped to decide the Big 12 year in and year out. And of course, Alabama LSU. And like, what to you should be realistically within this season, maybe next year, your ideal heavyweight groupings of matchups?
Okay. So a couple questions here before we address this question.
Yep.
Am I limited by the current divisional structure, or am I picking out 2 teams that I would like to see in an ideal world decide a conference?
I think the latter, preferably during the season, right? So that's like, it's an annual huge matchup. Maybe it even has a name. Maybe there's a trophy awarded to the winner of this matchup and it just has lost its luster. So like my clear example is Florida State Clemson.
Right.
For the ACC, I want Mackenzie Milton to be amazing. I want the defense to at least be competent. And I want, you know, they were led by the rushing attack that I think the running backs are ahead of the receivers right now. And the offensive line has improved enough. Like I want Mackenzie Milton to be so good that he will Florida State to become a competitive type team. Now, they're far away from Clemson. But to me, that sort of Florida State team, I think they have the number one recruiting class in the ACC right now. It's early. It's definitely early, but they've got some incredible guys committed. That to me is like, we need this.
Okay.
Because Clemson waltzing through the ACC is not fun.
Okay. Well, so you stole my thunder a little bit with Clemson.
Continue.
Clemson,
but that's
Florida
my
State.
General thought there. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
I think Clemson, Florida State is my answer for the ACC. They do play middle of the season. Hopefully Mackenzie Milton is healthy mm-hmm. and healed, and we get a good game there because we haven't for a while in that rivalry. So for me, that's the obvious answer. We would see something decided during the season about midway through. Clemson, Florida State.
Probably unrealistic, though, for this
Probably
season.
Unrealistic, but for my purposes, you asked yeah. the question, I would say
totally,
Clemson, Florida
totally.
State. Texas, Oklahoma, maybe is the lowest hanging fruit. I am terribly curious about what Oklahoma looks like, what their defense in particular looks like. And I'm very curious to see what Steve Sarkisian can pull out of his hat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have any objections to that, but the Red River Shootout is not only something that we get during the season, we could get another version of it. I'm not crazy about the rematch potential, if I'm being fair, but the Red River Shootout's a great rivalry. These are two great teams, two historic programs, Texas, Oklahoma, and the Big 12 for me.
That's not my answer for the Big 12, for what it's worth.
Are you going to say Iowa State, Oklahoma?
Nope.
Iowa State, Texas?
Nope.
Iowa State, Kansas State?
Nope.
Are there other teams left?
Yeah, of course. I want Bedlam.
Oh, okay.
I like that interstate thing. Eh. I like that it's later on in the season. We've had it as like the final game in years past.
We have.
I like that element of
2 weeks in a row, Bedlam.
Right. I like the element of, you know, this is all gas, no brakes. Apologies to Steve Sarkisian, who stood next to an all gas, no brakes sign at Texas. Mm-hmm. I like that there's that history of shootoutiness. And I don't love where Oklahoma State is offensively right now, but there is something that's pretty great about confining conference power into a state, much in the way the Iron Bowl does to a lot of people in the state of Alabama.
Okay.
That's something to me that I like a lot. And you have the personalities in there with Gundy, and not that Lincoln Riley is a huge personality, but there is that element of like younger guy against like school lifer and Gundy. That to me has the highest spice potential.
Right.
So okay. That's where my brain goes. Texas and Oklahoma play wild games every year, and it doesn't necessarily seem to propel Texas past Oklahoma ever. Not that Oklahoma State does it for Oklahoma either, but there is that spice end of the year that I just really appreciate.
I think in the SEC, for me, it's going to be Bama and Florida. They play earlier in the year. I'm intrigued by Georgia for obvious reasons, but I still don't really know what that offense is going to look like. And there's a lot of Nick Saban, old Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. And so mm-hmm. I fear that if the two of them play, it's going to be a painfully boring defensive slugfest.
Right.
Even though recent memory has not exactly proven that out. These are teams that can score. But Florida's got who? Emory Jones this year as its starter?
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll see. I feel like between Bryce Young and Emory Jones, that's going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen certain offensive minds have a good amount of success against Alabama, be it Hugh Freeze and, you know, Joe Brady a couple years ago at LSU, and Lane Kiffin and Dan Mullen. Certainly, they put up points in the SEC championship game. I can't go away from Alabama LSU in the SEC. There's a certain amount of energy and annual big gaminess, which
yeah.
nobody wants to be described as having big gaminess.
Big gaminess, right.
There is that heavyweight, and I didn't love 9-6, but I love the shootout a couple years ago, and I love that year in and year out, that's like a calendar circler, that you have that element of Louisiana and people, you know, flying to New Orleans and spending time there, then driving up to Baton Rouge or going to T-Town, whatever, and I like that. I like the SEC West when LSU has a puncher's chance. And Iron Bowl's fantastic. The cocktail party is fantastic. There's all sorts of rivalries and big games throughout the conference. But given the recent history the best kind of baggage exists within the Alabama LSU universe. So that's my answer.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I am intrigued by Florida.
Sure. Totally.
In the Pac-12, I guess I go USC and Oregon. I didn't necessarily have a natural foil to Oregon. Maybe it's like Washington. I know it's a rivalry, but I kind of don't care about that from this coast. I think USC Oregon is the matchup to me that's most interesting. And then in the Big Ten, I would say Penn State and Ohio State.
And Penn State, Ohio State's my answer for the Big Ten too, though.
Yeah, and I'm biased.
The whiteout environment,
right,
is the best environment in the Big Ten. In terms of just like, look, you can go to a great, loud, obnoxious game in a number of places. You can go to Camp Randall. You can go wherever. But the whiteout with Ohio State visiting, to me, subjectively me, is just,
yeah.
Can I say the tits? Like, that's just top of the level energy stakes. We've seen games come down to like, oh my God, how could you make that call at the end of the game? Or, oh my God, how could that, that punt or that field goal got blocked and that decided everything. Like, there's just something, the tiny moments get so magnified in that game.
Yeah.
That I love that.
And plus you always have the opportunity to watch James Franklin botch a 2-minute offense at the end of the game.
It's not a selling point.
Little tie. Cherry on top for those of you who don't like Penn State. It's always right on the table when you've got a big game. So I think those are my at least 5 power conference answers. We could debate those till we're blue in the face, but
sure.
Want to move on to question 2?
Let's do it. Okay. I've tweeted about this a little bit, but I've been watching a lot of F1 because I watched the Netflix sort of Hard Knocks F1 show Drive to Survive. And then I've been watching the races on Sunday morning, even a little bit of qualifying time. That's how sad I am.
All right. Why not?
I'm getting so old. And a hallmark of racing is you're drafting behind the car in front of you and just biding your time to wait for that perfect moment to slingshot past the car in front of you, you're to make your move. So to you, who has been building, whether it's, getting transfers in, the recruiting has improved, the assistant coaches coming in have been really impressive. Who has been building to that point? I'm not saying going from second in the conference to supplanting the top team, but saying, okay, here's a mid-tier conference team. They're going to slingshot past the second level of the conference. Or it could be number 2 in the conference or number 3 in the conference. Who has been quietly, methodically building, and all of a sudden you could see them just hitting the Nas or whatever it is people do.
In the Nas, fast,
the familiar,
Fast and Furious style. Mm-hmm. I am not going to answer your question in the manner that
next
you...
question.
No.
Oh.
In the manner that you want me to.
Okay.
I give this one not implying that anyone is going to zoom past Clemson.
Okay.
But Florida State right now has a top 5 class in the 2022 country recruiting cycle. Yeah. It's a really good class. It feels like there is a lot of momentum there in the recruiting game, especially Mike Norvell's an elite level recruiter. Mm-hmm. We already know there's a commitment to football. It's Florida State. Duh. Mm-hmm. The on-field product is obviously what needs to improve. And I feel like they're not all that far away from doing it. We'll see what Mackenzie Milton can do. But I feel like if the on-field product can improve just ever so marginally, that would go a great ways towards improving recruiting, improving morale, mm-hmm. and continuing to build that momentum in Tallahassee. I expect that the on-field product will improve. I just don't know what that looks like relative to the schedule, because it is not the easiest schedule in the world. There are like 5 very losable games on that schedule. They've got Notre Dame, they've got Clemson, they've got North Carolina, Miami, they've got Florida. Right. So it's going to be a tough go from a scheduling standpoint. They will pick 1 or 2 of those teams off. They will. I'm very bullish on Florida State this year. So if that on-field product improves a little bit, if recruiting stays strong, I think that is the team that is primed to take the biggest jump into competitive ACC football, let's say, because what we're really waiting for is for somebody else to rise up and take on Clemson. Granted, same division, same side of the division, but just to give somebody a foe year in and year out, a true landmine that they have to worry about every year, for Florida State to reclaim that mantle will be a big deal. So Florida State's my answer.
I don't think Florida State is right. My opinion.
Okay.
I just think that defense is so far away. I just, like, I'm talking about a team that has already, and I like the Mackenzie Milton addition, but a team that has already recruited well for a couple of years, that has already hired really well, that has already have, I mean, they don't necessarily have to have a quarterback in place, but like a very clear quarterback of the future in place. Like North Carolina is an interesting answer to that because of the recruiting level. I think Texas A&M was an answer, and they kind of slingshot with LSU and Auburn having down seasons in the West and Mississippi schools hiring new coaches. I think that's the level where A&M really did a very impressive job building up the talent, getting the results on the field. Now, they were not a playoff team, but they were the closest team knocking on the door.
Right.
And yeah, if Haynes King is good, the problem is obviously they have a monster that they're not going to be able to slingshot past, in my opinion. But where they were last year heading into the season, that was a clear team. Florida was a slingshot team. I think it's very difficult. We mentioned UCLA a couple times. That would be my answer there, probably in the Pac-12 in terms of slingshotting past the middle of the conference. I think they're not the top of the conference, but in that top conversation, that upper quarter of the conference.
Okay. Quadrant, if you will.
Oh, excuse me. Quadrant. Thank you very much for the correction. I appreciate that. SEC, I don't, I think we're probably a year away from feeling especially good about Mizzou. I think they're drafting right now.
Or more than a year away, but continue.
What do you mean?
I don't know if I feel that bullish on Mizzou.
Oh, you don't feel bullish on Mizzou.
I do like Eli Drinkwitz, but I don't know about a year.
No, no. I don't know. I think they play hard for him. I liked where their head is at recruiting wise. Just in terms of like they're a 500 team right now, right? They went 4-4, 5-5, whatever it was. I think they can be an 8-4 type team, 8-4, 9-3. Big Ten, a slingshot. Like it would have been nice to say Indiana. It really would have been call that.
Don't know how I feel
but
about that. No,
you can get in on Maryland because they've had a couple of really big recruiting wins in the best of Talia Tungavailoa.
No. You can't get in on Maryland. Don't do that to yourself. Just don't.
You can get in.
Don't do it.
Well, I'm just saying there are positive elements to the Terps' momentum, right? Not saying that they will slingshot. I'm saying that they're a sling candidate.
Everybody's a sling candidate, but don't do it to yourself.
No, no, no. Like
don't
Michigan's not a sling candidate. Michigan hasn't been quietly building towards this big moment where like Cade McNamara or JJ McCarthy or whoever is going to be a Heisman contender. Like their trajectory isn't such that they're a sling candidate, but in terms of slope, like Iowa sort of is what it is. Northwestern slung back to where they have been.
Let's go to question.
Maryland's the candidate. Maryland's the candidate.
Don't do that to yourself. Don't.
I'm not choosing them, but I'm saying if you were seeking a candidate, that's who it is.
All right. Next question. What do we got next?
Okay. This is sort of similarly in line. We've talked about going from bad to good being easier from going than it's easier going from bad to good than going from good to great.
Correct. Right. We did.
And
we did talk.
We mentioned stuff like that. So, and we've mentioned all of these teams now this show, but of these teams, or maybe you have another team in mind, who is closest to getting over their personal hump? Now, everybody's hump is a little bit different, but essentially it's who's closest to getting into the top four, because that's what we're, you know, looking at in terms of going from good to great is that's the benchmark right now. Maybe it goes to 12 in a couple of years, 4 years, whatever it is. But that's the benchmark we're talking about. Teams that are knocking on that door. Notre Dame, who've now made it to the top four, but look like they have a ceiling. Wisconsin, who have been very close, but have not cracked it. Oregon, been close since they did crack it in the inaugural season of being a top four team. And Florida,
right?
Who they were in the SEC championship game. They slung past Georgia last year, but certainly looked like, just in terms of some defensive regression, they had health issues on offense. Who of those teams is just like,
there's
just
two,
this little tweak.
There are two obvious answers. Number one is Notre Dame, because recruiting is strong. The schedule sets up well to put them in position for a playoff. And we're at the point now with Notre Dame, Dan, where it is that constant exposure on the national stage that's going to keep attracting talent. Frankly, just give them more opportunities to play against better teams. Okay, the skeptic in you could say that's more opportunity to lose. It's also more opportunity to win. Sooner or later, they're going to break through, but they have to keep putting themselves in that situation.
Why?
They have to put themselves in that situation to keep getting there, to keep getting the talent, and eventually they will have their breakthrough moment. But they just
have a sample size? We have a sample size of Brian Kelly. Unlike what we have from Dan Mullen and Mario Cristobal, we sort of do with Paul Crist for sure. But we at least don't, we haven't seen Florida or Oregon reach that point and just be very clearly outclassed.
Now, Boise State, just as a crude example.
Sure. Whoa.
When Boise State eventually made their emergence onto the college football stage and became more of a national talking point, that happened gradually over the course of time and with repeated attempts. Repeatedly, they would play against teams that were perceived to be better than them. Now, in a lot of cases, they won those games. Important disclaimer. But they went to bowl games. They did well. They played against non-conference opponents. They did well. It was that slow and steady drumbeat over the course of two decades that got them to where they're at now. Now, Notre Dame is not, of course, the perfect analog to Boise State in this comparison. But my only point is they're now at the stage where they're really only a couple positions away from feeling a lot more competitive in some of those big matchups. And I'm merely
six abs away from having
they need the quarterback. They need the quarterback. Yeah. They need the quarterback. They get the quarterback. I think that's a huge turning point. I don't know if they found that quarterback with Tyler Buchner. Time will tell. But I feel like Notre Dame is the obvious choice, if only because they have the cleanest pathway to get there. Oregon is number two for me. Okay. Oregon is number two because there just isn't that Goliath standing in their way in the North or the South. They're building that team. It's a little bit of a different composition than it was when Chip Kelly was there. Mario Cristobal's got a different philosophy about how he's building his team. It's a lot more physical now, and they're still pulling that top tier talent. So I think Oregon's the obvious one to me. They too need to figure out their quarterback spot. Yep. But Oregon in the Pac-12, I think, is an easy number two. It's on the same tier as Notre Dame. I can't go Wisconsin because they got to contend with Ohio State. I can't go Florida because they've got to contend with both Georgia and with Alabama in the SEC West.
No, I know. But there's at least an element with Wisconsin where they've gotten to that stage against Ohio State. They've given Ohio State all it can handle, and they came up short. Like, I think Wisconsin has acquitted itself at times better than Notre Dame has acquitted itself the best teams that they've played.
No, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. But again, I'm looking at this through the lens of repeated opportunities.
Sure.
Giving yourself more bites at the apple. And from my view, the two teams that are best positioned to do that are both Notre Dame and Oregon. So those are my answers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm too close to Oregon.
But Oregon's a compelling answer.
Oh, it for sure is. But
could very easily be your number one here.
Yeah, the problem with Oregon right now is they have a blue chip quarterback waiting in the wings, but there's nothing in terms of clear optimism that they've got that guy ready to go and push them over the top. That's the problem with Oregon. And I mean, yeah, Wisconsin, I'm a little bit down on. Like, I think they may have peaked. And Florida, I think, is quite interesting. And I know they have at least one blue chip quarterback committed. But again, there's no obvious clear answer that, okay, they've got like their next version of Kyle Trask or Dak Prescott or whoever from the Dan Mullen universe. But Florida's the most interesting answer in terms of offensive mind mixed with talent availability, proximity, recruiting track record. Oregon's recruited very well. Notre Dame's recruited very well. My issue with Notre Dame is we actually have a sample size.
We
know Brian Kelly Notre Dame teams don't beat the best teams in the country in December and January. Like, that's, if nothing else, about Brian Kelly. We know he's done a great job with Notre Dame, but he's the one who has shown us Notre Dame's ceiling this past decade.
For sure.
So that's the problem. That at least Mario Cristobal and Dan Mullen haven't had the sample size yet.
And that is the main point of criticism. for Kelly. It is. He's gotten to the stage a couple times now and has very much underperformed. Who knows?
But you got to get there to underperform, though. And Notre Dame's done that. They got there. That's great.
Who knows what happens if they expand this thing up to 12? That could be a different conversation altogether. But at least Notre Dame, my vantage point here is which team has the easiest road to make it back and potentially get a big win. I know Notre Dame's been there and they haven't, but I think they've got the easiest pathway, at least how the system is currently set up.
Yeah. This question is much more around like, okay, who's going to win that game that it's going to tell everybody, yep, this is a new era of team blank.
Team blank.
Final college football question. Ty, you're a generally optimistic person. You are.
I am.
You're a glass half full. You're a positive person. You have very few enemies, but there are enemies out there.
There are some.
I now want the venom to envelop you, Ty. Ooh. Like the Spider-Man evil
raw untamed
black
power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I need that like real weird tongue to come out. Doesn't Venom have isn't there a strange tongue situation? Am I making that up?
I have no idea.
Okay. Plant your flag now. Be negative. I know this is against your character. Late June. Which first year college football head coach hire? So just hired. Has not coached a game for their team yet. Are you going to plant your flag right now and say, doesn't work for me?
Okay. The lowest hanging fruit, I feel like I've said that 1,000 times in this episode, would be Jed Fish at Arizona. If only because he's a first time head coach, he's learning on the fly.
Yeah.
Were you the one who told me there were some within the program that really wanted Jed Fish, but there were others who are like,
I think the school president really wanted him. And that was the biggest voice. Yeah.
Not everybody was fully in on Jed Fish. That said, everyone seems to be excited about what he's built.
The bar is really low. The bar is super duper low for Arizona, though.
Super low. And from the bit that I've read, starting to do research here, there seems to be excitement about what he's building. So I am not going to make Jed Fish my answer. My answer is Josh Heupel, also known as Josh Heupel.
Heupel.
From back in the day. Josh Heupel got hired at Tennessee. So Danny White, the previous AD at UCF, came up to Knoxville, and when they were looking for a new head football coach, he also brought along Heupel, who was with him at UCF. I feel like he's going to give the offense some juice. That's what he's very good at. And certainly that has been his track record. He's a good offensive mind.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a huge track record there for building a program, for reeling in the type of elite talent that you're going to need to make the Vols competitive in the SEC. And there's also like that weird potential sanction situation at Tennessee, which does enter into the fray as well.
Right.
I remember when this announcement was made, there were a bunch of names that came out as potentials for Tennessee. And then I heard Heupel and I was like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about this one. It's not giving me the warm fuzzies. For what it's worth, Brian Kelly didn't give me the warm fuzzies when he got hired at Notre Dame, and he's worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So the warm fuzzies aren't necessarily a great scientific indicator for how well a coach is or isn't.
But was there a clear, better, and willing option? That's the issue. Like,
No. I'm not necessarily faulting anyone for the hire. It's a fine hire. I understand why they did it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. So if I'm going negative on anybody...
Is he more set up to fail than others? That's what essentially you're saying.
I think so. Yeah, I think so, because it's a tough spot. You've got both Georgia and Florida really, really rising in the SEC East. You've got Tennessee, who is largely stagnated. The Jeremy Pruitt thing did not work out well, ended on a moment's notice. And like I said, maybe there's some sanctions situation. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the track record with Heupel. He's done well when he stepped in. Like, he took over for Scott Frost. It did fine at UCF. He scored 1,000 points a game. Great.
Right.
Tennessee fans would jump up and down for that. They would love that. But beyond that, beyond the offensive firepower, has he built a program? Has he reeled in like that top level elite talent that you know Tennessee is going to need to compete in the SEC East? Not that I'm aware of. Maybe it'll build, but I feel slightly negative on Heupel, if I'm being honest.
My answer is Brian Harsin.
Okay. culturally because of the cultural fit, or
no? I think if you can coach, you can coach. That's been proven. You can hire coaches. You can hire a staff that, like, I don't know. I think if you relate to players, if you're able to hit the recruiting trail hard, if you're able to hire really well, which I think the Derek Mason hire at defensive coordinator is good. I don't know how long he'll be there. I don't think I'm in love with the Mike Bobo hire on offense, and recruiting hasn't been amazing. I think they have the worst. I just clicked this right now. It looks like they have the current worst class in the SEC. It's going to take time, obviously. Year one, right, or year zero or whatever. You can't fully hold that against the head coach when you don't have time to build those relationships. The bar that exists at Auburn.
I know. I thought about Harsin. I thought about going Harsin with this.
I just, for whatever reason, it leaves me a little meh.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, whether it's the recruiting thing early on, whether it's the hires overall, whether it's the quarterback situation that he has to work with, that we talk about sample size. I think we know who Bo Nix is. Thrilled to be wrong about it, but I think we know.
Right.
And so I think the expectations are so outlandish as it relates to the reality right now. And there's a lot to love about the Auburn roster, but for whatever reason, I'm just left wanting for more.
When Texas had an opening, there were a number of names that were mentioned in relation to that job,
mm-hmm,
that got the juices flowing. I don't feel like that was the case with Auburn. And I'm not trying to imply
that's the Saban effect, but yeah.
Right. And I'm not trying to imply that Auburn should not have moved on from Gus Malzahn. I think Gus Malzahn probably, they should have parted ways mutually a while ago. But
wow.
When the Auburn job came open, I remember at one point saying to you, they go a bunch of different directions here. And
yeah,
I'm not hearing that many candidates that, if I were an Auburn fan, make me all that excited. Brian Harsin's a very good coach, and if they're looking to introduce some stability into the Auburn program instead of this yearly whipsaw that they've been on, Harsin's done that. He's done that at Boise State, different set of circumstances, but has definitely done that. He just doesn't give me the same juice as a sexy hire like a Steve Sarkisian. You know, it did leave a lot of us very underwhelmed.
Well, Steve Sarkisian has not had a crazy amount of success as a head coach.
No, also true.
He is
also true.
He laundered his reputation as a coach at Alabama. He got sober. He was able to just focus on football and calling plays. And obviously, he recruited at Alabama. But there's this element of he helmed the greatest scoring offense of all time. Didn't necessarily assemble it. Didn't necessarily run practice and sort of improve things incrementally over the course of every day in the off season for four straight off. Like, it's not the job that he did in Tuscaloosa. So it's sexy in that he came from a sexy place. I think there's a Rihanna song about that. But I see what you're saying. But he's just in a number of ways, is a very good coach who is the beneficiary of something excellent. So,
right. Okay.
I wonder, just because at least Brian Harsin and Josh Heupel, they've succeeded as head coaches. They have. I mean, I think UCF's 2020 was disappointing, but the best of UCF under Josh Heupel is very dangerous. Quarterbacks developed. So,
okay. Well, we'll see.
I don't know how would you feel if Josh Heupel were at Auburn?
I don't know. I'm just not a hypo guy.
That's fine.
Just not. Never been.
Okay. I don't know. There's something about Harsin where it's like, okay. Like, it just, it doesn't, you don't need to win me over. I'm irrelevant. You don't need to win a press conference. You don't need to be the sexiest hire that wins like the message boards week one. But I don't know. I've thought about Auburn so much less this offseason than I have in a decade, at least.
Oh,
and right. That worries me.
Off topic questions. We're over an hour.
Let's make this as snappy as we can. But we have two very important questions here, I think, to close out.
Dan. I don't know if I fully understand yours, but I'm ready to try.
It's the year 2072.
Okay.
You are being recruited by a number of top programs. Let's say you're a quarterback recruit out of suburban Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But now, the way that the NCAA has gone, new rules state that schools cannot offer scholarships at all. They're gone. All they can offer are unlimited supplies of snack foods.
Okay.
Which snack foods would present the most compelling case for you to leave the cozy confines of your suburban snack Chicago foods. Neighborhood, go to a terrible location like Southern California or
how dare you
Texas yeah. or, you know, somewhere that's a lot warmer. What snack foods, if you had in an unlimited supply, would be enough to sway you to go to a particular program?
So by snack food, you mean like some sort of prepackaged like chip or candy or something like that?
I am preferably looking for something that is, yes, not natural, does not exist in the universe naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say something like black olives.
And there's just, on my official visit, there's a crate waiting for me. And be like, oh man, how can I turn down coming here?
Are we going like white cheddar popcorn? Are we going sourdough pretzels, Mars bars, Skittles? Like what if you had in an unlimited supply, Doritos?
So is your
enough.
Question basically just like what snack would you get sick of the least if you had to eat a lot of it?
In effect, the answer is yes.
Okay. So it has to be like I couldn't select like an orange.
No,
couldn't
no. Has to be something that does not naturally occur in the universe and, you know, is unhealthy to consume in mass quantities.
Sure. Probably something that has a little bit of sweetness. Isn't crazy filling, not too sweet, not too heavy. Man, the most boring but realistic answer I could come up with is like kettle corn.
Kettle corn.
Like I wouldn't if I selected like a Snickers bar or if I selected Doritos Nacho Cheesier, which at one point it was called Nacho Cheesier.
It was at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a really funny understood episode about it.
Corn.
I can't see myself being so impressed by like Hershey's miniatures. Like that's just gonna, it's not gonna feel good after a week, after 3 days. Kettle corn's light enough. It's the salty and sweet at the same time. I'd be like, all right, it'd be fun to jump into a pool of kettle corn. That's my answer.
Okay.
What's your answer? You've obviously given this thought.
Not really. I was just thinking of it from your perspective, because we don't talk a lot about snack foods on the show. You know, we're a college football show, pizza show sometimes, tailgating show other times. But
what would it take for you to seduce Charlize Theron sometimes?
Right. Yeah. Snack foods, though, is a new frontier that I'd like to explore more with you in coming episodes.
I have lots of snack thoughts.
We're going to explore those.
We can do an episode about snacks, and we can do an off-topic episode called Snaction or something like that for the Verballers. Right.
Yeah, see, I don't know either exactly what counts here. You know, everyone's got their own relative measure for what's a snack food and what
could
isn't.
Wear a kettle corn necklace.
I have a thing for a very specific brand of sourdough pretzels.
Okay, that's not a bad answer because you could dip them.
Yeah, I accidentally bought honey mustard instead of yellow mustard this weekend for a little bit of a cookout scenario I had here. And
okay.
I just about put down a whole bag of these guys, dipping it in the
honey
mustard.
They do really well.
Yeah.
Pretzels and honey mustard are a winning combo. Yeah.
So right now, the answer du jour would be the sourdough pretzels, which you can
get.
Is
there a brand that you're looking for a sponsorship from?
I have to look up the brand. I'm not opposed to name dropping here on the show. They do offer one of those subscription bits out on Amazon. You know, if you just want to get it sent to your door every week, whatever, they do that. But I'll get more info for you in case you're interested.
My question to you, Ty. You and I both live a relatively sedentary professional life.
Correct.
Right? We sit in front of screens. We type away at our keyboards. We're on Zoom calls. We're, you know, cameras and microphone. Like, it's sedentary. We sit. Sometimes we stand while we're doing it, but we're not moving around. We're not getting our hands dirty. We're not on our feet all day.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, if we were offered, each of us, a 6-month sabbatical to do something with our hands, to do something on our feet, to do something where we're physically creating something. Right. Okay. It could be construction. It could be cooking. It could be a teacher. Right. You could be teaching English or something like that. You get this 6-month sabbatical, and at the end of your 6-month sabbatical, your manager reviews you. And if you get an excellent review in this new pursuit of yours during the 6-month digital sabbatical, you get $500,000 as a bonus.
OK,
what? On your feet, with your hands, non-digital, no phones, no computers, no nothing
yeah.
of that kind of sort. And I'll count teaching, because I'm talking about what you and I believe to be teaching or understand to be teaching. I know there's iPads and all that stuff now, but I'm talking about in front of a chalkboard, reading the Iliad, whatever, something like that.
Iliad. Right.
Like 1991 Robin Williams teaching. That's okay. what I'm talking about.
So I could say Little League baseball coach.
I don't think you can make a living as a Little League baseball coach.
Okay.
You could say high school baseball coach slash like geometry teacher, yeah, something like that.
I don't do geometry. You know that.
Okay. Well, if you're going to say baseball coach.
What about a private baseball coach, like a tutor? They offer those. You can get private
so
instruction.
So do you think as a private baseball coach after six months, your manager running this like operation, this academy, but what was the Fred McGriff one called?
Tom Emanski.
You're Ty Emanski.
Sure.
After 6 months, whoever is bankrolling you, whoever is like, damn, you're getting results. The parents love you. The kids love you. Like you are just an absolute success story.
I'm a
you
player's
that's
coach.
Your answer.
I'm a player's coach. I don't think that's the answer. I have a couple of other options here. That we could
all right,
go
so
with.
You're not. This is not a tough love situation. You're not suddenly getting like amazing sliders out of 15-year-olds.
No, exactly.
Okay.
But along the same lines, I think I could be a very effective sign stealer for the Houston Astros.
That's not okay. Let's come up with like an actual occupation that you'd be able to like write on your taxes.
I would also be a very good omelet chef. An egg chef at a local eatery or hotel.
Okay, hold on. This is a good answer. So you take your sabbatical and you go, like you're working at like a diner, like a place that specializes in breakfast.
Got to wear the big hat, though. I want people to respect the fact that I am the egg chef.
Wait, you want a chef's hat?
I want a chef's hat. Yeah, I do.
To make omelets in a diner?
I do.
Okay.
I do. It adds to the allure. I'm trying to get 500 large out of this. So.
Okay. So you are a good amateur omelet chef.
Correct.
You would not, you feel good about yourself under pressure. Orders up, it's hot, it's sweaty. Somebody wants no mushrooms, somebody wants extra mushrooms. You think you have the temperament, you think you have the skill.
I do.
You think you have for that sort of stressful position.
I need the hat though. I want the hat is part of the persona. I need the hat.
Okay. Okay. Omelet chef. Okay, so you could probably be an omelet chef at like a hotel or on a cruise or something, but I don't think it's that specialized in a diner. Like, I think you're going to be needing to make pancakes, and I think you're going to be, you're making hash browns. You're making omelets.
Listen,
for sure.
You asked the question. I gave you the answer. I'm an egg chef at a local eatery or hotel. Full stop. I don't make pancakes. I don't make waffles. I'm a lefty specialist. I am Riel Cormier coming out of the bullpen.
I'm
2 outs in the seventh inning. Just get one strikeout, one ground ball, and then go back to the dugout. That is who I am here.
I'm just telling you the reality is, if you're working for the Four Seasons, if you're working for the Intercontinental, the Renaissance, you're working for the Ritz or whatever, and you're making omelets in the morning, you're probably tending bar later.
We did this was not a reality-based question, Dan.
It is a reality-based question. It absolutely is.
Some of the other ones I had here, I have professional bird watcher. Does that count?
No, this is not a job.
Okay.
You want to become like an ornithology student? Like you have to like train for a lot of like skilled jobs.
What about a ball picker at a local driving range?
You can do that. I don't know what you would do to differentiate yourself from other ball pickers.
You get all the
balls. Earn the bonus. I guess seems bare minimum.
Well, you were asking the question.
I know.
We did not put lines around this that it needed to be reality based. But listen, it sounds like my best option here is the egg cooker.
But that doesn't exist as a job.
It does now. This is my answer. Omelet chef, local eatery or hotel.
So you're envisioning a world in which there is a cook, a short order cook,
right,
whipping up everything. And anytime there's an omelet order, he's like tapping his right shoulder, like bringing in a reliever specialist.
That's exactly right.
All right.
And
so
I
you're
just
not
emerge.
Living in reality.
I just emerge.
See, I think you would be great. Like, I think if you're able to make a good omelet, I think hash browns and pancakes, that's no sweat.
I can do hash browns.
You're not filling like you are with an omelet. You're not filling and folding in the same way.
If we need to be proper with this to conform to Dan Rubenstein's reality.
This is just Earth.
Then I'll say breakfast chef. Is that a thing? A breakfast chef?
Well, chefs go to culinary school, but yes, a breakfast short order cook. Yeah.
I'll say that.
I could see it. You're up early. You're an early riser anyway. So that issue won't come to bear. You're a people person. So I think people would forgive you if you mess up an order here and there, and you would get along with people at the bar, the regulars. You come from a particularly diner heavy part of the world, so it's you're familiar with the culture. I don't know how greasy I see you. That's not my issue.
All right.
I think you're a bit of a pretty boy.
Ooh, wow. The first cut's the deepest. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as I like to say, fun show.
I would teach tennis or make, I would work at a bakery.
Teach tennis
pizzas
or
sourdough or something.
Yeah. How is working at a bakery different from picking up balls at the driving range?
I'm saying I would bake. I would be somebody who works in a bakery. I would be somebody who shows up early in the morning.
That's
and
a job.
Mixes. Yeah. That's what I'm asking you.
A ball picker's a job.
A ball picker's a job, but it's hard to differentiate. You can differentiate yourself as a baker pretty easily. Your craft is either good or it's not.
Double standards once more on the solid.
No,
it's all
absolutely
right. It's okay.
Not.
It's okay. It's fine. We're all friends.
Are there
here.
Awards for golf ball driving range picker uppers?
I will have to get back to you on that. I don't know.
Okay.
I just don't know. I could be a caddy. I used to be a caddy.
Okay. What differentiates you?
I mean,
you cracking wise?
Just constant yardage. I'm a good green reader. I can't putt for crap, but I can read putts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That counts. So you'd be a professional caddy. You'd be.
It's a terrible job. You don't want to, unless you're like really out there.
And you have
PGA
a bum
tour.
Shoulder.
Yeah. You don't want to be a professional caddy. I know people who are professional caddies. You don't want that job. Anyway. Okay. Interesting show, let's say.
Oh,
fun
man.
Way
now
to
I'm
close
really trying
here.
To think about how you would. Like what? Where could you thrive?
I told you.
I could plumbing. What about plumber?
No, I don't want that job.
You don't want your hands dirty like that?
No, I respect the hell out of people who are very good at plumbing. I would not be good in that capacity.
No sort of teacher, construction of any kind.
I would be a good teacher.
Could you run a shop of some kind?
Maybe.
You have the temperament to do the books and interact with the public. And deal with inventory,
this
that
is
kind
like,
of thing.
This is like the Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is pondering his life.
Yeah. That's what I'm always... There are times, Ty, where I think to myself, it would be nice to just to work with dough and listen to podcasts and like have that be my Zen career.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, write in.
Yeah.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com. Follow us on social media. We will be posting... Mm-hmm. More fun tidbits about this episode.
Yes.
Starting Tuesday.
Yeah.
Show drops 6 a.m. Eastern. So please do listen. Please do give us a holler. And please do check out verballers.com for all
omelet
info.
Omelet chef.
As it relates to our Patreon, Dan. That's all I got.
Yeah. No, the Patreon's great. We've got a whole, like, we are resetting everything in, like, a very fun way for the season. A lot of new stuff coming there. We've got a couple of fun new episodes coming up here that we're, like, pre-recording with guests and scheme stuff. It's really fun. So, a lot of excitement. We're starting previews in not a terribly long time.
No, like, a couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. And yep. Can I be super duper mysterious and vague for a moment?
If you'd like to.
We have an off-topic show that will be available to Verballers. What's today's date? That we're recording this on June 28th.
July the 16th.
July the 16th.
Yeah.
We will have an off-topic show available only to Verballers, who are our subscribers on Patreon, that is a long, like how long have we been doing this show? 2008?
2008, yeah.
I would say it's 2008, like a long time coming, a 2008 since and coming. This is, I hesitate to use big adjectives, mostly because I don't know what they all mean. But this is a show that is a long, long, long time coming.
It is, in our little universe, a very big deal.
This is going to be...
It's a very big deal.
If you have listened to me and you have listened to Ty for a long time...
Yeah.
This will be a show of particular importance to you.
It's true. It's true.
Did I say all of those things accurately and mysteriously enough?
I think you did.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Verballers.com.
Verballers.com. Just taking the information and make your own decision. A long time coming.
More to come. More to come.
Yes.
That's that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. We will talk to you all soon. In the meantime, as always, thank you for listening and stay solid.
Peace.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.